భద్రం కర్ణేభిర్శృణుయామదేవాః భద్రం పశ్యేమాక్షభిర్యజత్రాః స్థిరైరంగైస్తుష్టువాగంసస్తనూభిః యశేమదేవహితయ్యదాయుః ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతిః. May we hear with our ears what is auspicious. May we see with our eyes what is auspicious. May we enjoy with strong limbs and bodies the life allotted to us. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto us all. For the welfare of all. As you know, the motto of our order, the Ramakrishna order, is Atmano Mokshartham Jagathitaya Cha, Atmanaha, for the liberation of the Atman, Moksha, for the liberation of one's own reality, one's own being. And Jagatita, for the welfare of Jagat, the whole world. So the question arises, what constitutes Jagatita? And how is it possible, if this is our motto, why is it that we should work for the welfare of all? That is one important question. To work for one's own welfare, to strive for one's own welfare, is self-evident. But to strive for our own welfare by means of striving for the welfare of everyone, how are the two related, and why are they put on the same pedestal? Who is that everyone that we're supposed to strive for the welfare of it? But the actual establishment of the Ramakrishna order by Swami Vivekananda, originally by Sri Ramakrishna himself, who gave the first and strongest impetus to it, and then by Swami Vivekananda following him, with the encouragement of the Holy Mother, Sri Ramakrishna's consort, and the effective head of the order, actually, of all of this movement after Sri Ramakrishna's passing away, although she never assumed an actual office, everyone went to her for advice and consultation, and she inspired them all. So, what is it that we can say about that goal and about how to put it into practice? Now, what is it that we can do? There's other questions arise. What is it that we should do that would contribute to the welfare of Jagat, of the whole universe? So, in this particular age, we find that that type of idea is very popular, is very, very attractive. Probably because in this age, there may be less of that actually going on. This age has certainly been spectacular for its negative aspects. And the emphasis of a positive topic is certainly to be expected to be a great encouragement. But to connect the two, to connect our own highest welfare, the best that we can do for our own advancement, to connect that with the welfare of the world, is expected in these days and times, but not really well explained. In other words, what is it? What is the fundamental set of principles that would lead one to think of it that way, that in order to bring about the welfare of ourselves, we must strive for the welfare of everyone? And conversely, in order to provide for the welfare of everyone, we have to provide for the welfare of ourselves. And the question is, what constitutes that welfare? What is our highest, what contributes to our highest welfare? Now, you could say these ideas began long before Swami Vivekananda came on the scene in Calcutta at the temple where Sri Ramakrishna was living. Actually, you could say it started with a vision that Sri Ramakrishna had of going up into a very high realm and seeking out a being who, for whom that realm of existence, you could say a type of heaven, a type of spiritual loka, that a being from that realm, Sri Ramakrishna, in his vision, as he told it to his followers later, he brought such a being from such a realm down to this world. And what is it that made him feel that way? What is it that caused this particular urging in his own consciousness? Of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, there is the well-known idea that from age to age, the divine reality, the foundation of the spiritual consciousness of humanity, manifests from age to age for the welfare of the age. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. Whenever the righteousness declines and adharma, unrighteousness, blossoms and tends to assume the central attention, then as things are about to be engulfed by this adharma, this unrighteousness, this this negative impulse, the very essence of positivity, the very essence of that reality, the Lord himself or herself, the Lord incarnates in order to protect dharma and to subdue the tendency toward adharma, toward negativity. So that being the reason for the advent of such extraordinary personalities provides the clue and provides the impetus of how this age is to be looked at when one considers the question of righteousness, unrighteousness, how this world should move, how it should develop. And it's also gives the clue as to how the welfare of all is connected to the welfare of each one. It's not a question of simply a summation. The sum of all the individuals is the totality, so the welfare of all the individuals would be leading to the welfare of the totality. That is a very simplified view. The point is, what is that individual and what is that totality? The Upanishads make it very clear that that individual, the essence of individual, of each individual, can never be separated from the essence of everything. Inside each being, inside each person, inside each manifestation, there is a reality which is actually the one infinite perfection toward which all this is eventually moving through all the rocky paths that it takes. So that motto of the order, Atmano Mokshartham Jagathitaya, for one's own liberation, liberation from ignorance, and for the welfare of all beings, is reflective of that fundamental tendency of this universe. It doesn't always look like that. In some respects, it looks like it's going from bad to worse. But in the process of going from bad to worse, it actually, ultimately, it is a purifying, a purification process. And Sri Ramakrishna in his life indicated that in so many ways. For instance, on his way to the pilgrimage site of Varanasi or Kashi, the holiest city in India, with the proprietor of the temple that he was, where he was living, where he was, had functioned at one time as priest, where he was the inspiration for all who came to that temple. In the company of the proprietor of that temple, he set out for this holiest of cities, it was a general custom for all to aspire to go to at least once in their lifetime. And certainly before the end of their life, they should at some point actually retire there or to a similar place and spend their, the remaining days in contemplation of that spiritual reality that is the essence of everything, which is the goal of our life. So on the way to Varanasi, they stopped at a village. They went by boat. They had a flotilla of boats. Mathura Babu, the owner of the temple who was conducting the pilgrimage, was a very wealthy person, and he traveled in magnificent style, you could say in royal style. Actually, when he got to Varanasi, he used to walk about with an attendant carrying a silver umbrella. So he was not a person to want to save money on any particular project, provided that that long-range view of magnificence was there. But both stopped at this village on the bank of the Ganga, and the villagers came there and they sat there looking at this rich man and all of his magnificent, the magnificent trappings. And they were very quiet, very solemn, because they themselves were suffering from famine. They had nothing to eat, they had nothing to wear. Sri Ramakrishna, who was the honored guest of the party, came ashore and saw them. And he told Mathura, the head of the pilgrimage, you must do something for these people. You must feed them all. You must give them all cloth. You must give them some money in order to carry on their life. And Mathura said, no, no, Father, this pilgrimage is so expensive. I cannot possibly afford this. Then he said, in that case, I will stay at this place and I will not go with you on the pilgrimage any further if you don't help these people. And he sat down among them. They were all, there was a group of them sitting there watching this magnificent display of pomp that was being put on by the head of the pilgrimage, this Mathura Babu. They were simply quietly watching it, remembering their own miserable condition. Sri Ramakrishna went there, sat down among them, and refused to move from that spot until Mathura gave assurance that he would take care of doing what Sri Ramakrishna had asked for, to give them, each of them, cloth and to provide food for them. Now, this, you could say, this was the natural impetus that a spiritually highly advanced person, or even any person, spiritually advanced or not, would normally feel intrinsically that this was the right thing to do. But Sri Ramakrishna, this was not the only instance in which this sort of idea came from him. And he knew that his behavior and his example would be used as an inspiration for others. He knew the role that his life was to play. So we can well take it for a deliberate demonstration of the type of action that he favored. And furthermore, later on, he made also further additional indications of this type of outlook on life, that the welfare of all was a way of promoting one's own ultimate welfare. Seeing at one time he was reciting verses from a well-known hymn of Sri Chaitanya, an incarnation of God, considered an incarnation of God, saying that one should take the name of the Lord, repeat the name of God, one should feel oneself to be the servant of all. And he raised that level of understanding to a, you could say, to the ultimate degree by saying, by coining this phrase, which later on Swami Vivekananda used as a, or translated as an impetus to all the work that he instituted later. Seeing Shiva in all beings, you know, serve them, knowing that all being Shiva, meaning the ultimate divinity, knowing that divinity resides in all beings and in all things, serve them. That was the motto that he, at one time, in one particular circumstance, he emphasized. And he was in a very lofty state of consciousness when he expressed that idea. Swami Vivekananda was struck by the profundity of the idea, and he used it in a very specific way when he founded this Ramakrishna Mission, Ramakrishna Order. But that should be our entire life, can be guided by that. So having the vision of Shiva, having the vision of God in everything that we do, in all things, in all people, in all beings, serve them. Perform all actions as service. That is a, a world-transforming concept. It isn't, we're not actually doing it for any small reason. We're not actually doing it for any limited purpose. We are raising the ordinary concepts of helpfulness, of mercy, of kindness, raising that to the supreme spiritual level, seeing, and that can be expanded to the entire range of our activities, which is what Swami Vivekananda did when he formulated when he organized the Ramakrishna Mission disorder. Every action, the idea is that every action can be looked upon as being offered not only as a worship of God or as a spiritual act, but every action can be looked at as being directed specifically to God. Seeing God, what is God? God is the infinite reality, the unbounded reality that is at the heart of everything, which assumes that there is such a thing, that every finite phenomenon is actually at heart an infinite reality, which means that there is nothing finite in this universe. Our problem is we're always bothered by finite things. We have so many troubles. This is causing us difficulty. That is causing us difficulty. This is not good enough. This is too difficult. We're filled with problems. There is some satisfaction in this or that, but the overwhelming background of our existence is related to problems, either personal problems, family problems, community problems, national problems. Problems are what dictate or regulate or mark our life. The idea is that really, as long as we see problems, we will have to strive for solutions. And any solution that we strive for will be partially successful and partially unsuccessful, which will lead to further problems. So there's no end to it. We run our life from beginning to end as trying to achieve this and achieve that. And every achievement brings on further questions that have to be addressed and that we have to struggle with. This type of attitude that is being talked about here that held in this motto of Sri Ramakrishna, that seeing Shiva in all beings, the proper attitude toward everything is worship. So seeing that divine reality in every manifestations, pratibodha viditam, it is to be seen in every cognition from the Kena Upanishad. Seeing that reality in everything, what is the proper attitude of whatever we need to do as a consequence of our life? Service. Whatever we do becomes a worship. Becomes a service, that service becomes a worship. It is, all of our activities are raised to the level of worship. Everything we do becomes a worship. It's not that we're trying to achieve something by what we do. In a limited sense, we are trying to achieve. Yes, you have to earn a certain amount of money in order to manage in this world. You have to, there are certain definite things that have to be done, no doubt about that. But how is all of this to be looked at? Every action is, according to this idea, is for the welfare of all. So the whole motto is Atmano Mokshartam, for one's own welfare, for one's own freedom, Jagatita, for the welfare of the world. But what is it that, how is it to be looked at? Every action is to be looked at as a worship. Every action is to be seen as filled with divinity. Then, of course, you say, well, I'm supposed to see it as filled with divinity, but I don't see anything. I want the vision of God. I don't see God. I want to engage in spiritual practices so my consciousness will deepen and I will see God. But what this motto actually tells us is we're already seeing God. We're seeing nothing but that divine reality. The essence of everything is that divine reality. That is the message that is being relayed. And seeing Shiva in everything, seeing God in everything, Shiva Gnane Jiva Seva, that is how he put it in, Sri Ramakrishna put it in Bengali. Seeing Shiva in all beings, in all things. He didn't even say Shiva Gnane, seeing Shiva, that is to say being conscious of the presence of God. Jiva Seva, then you worship, you serve all beings. So whatever we do for one another is not I'm doing you a favor or I'm asking you to do a favor for me. What is actually, as long as we look at things that way, our problems will continue. The idea is that we're dealing with divinity only, sarvam kalidam brahma, from the Chandogya Upanishad. Sarvam, all, kalu, indeed, idam, this, all this indeed is Brahman, is that divine background that is at the heart of everything. That these things are to be taken as fundamental, as serious. It isn't that I'm leading my life and eventually I will realize that. That's putting the cart before the horse. The first thing is that every experience is an experience of God. Everything we have to do is filled with that divine spirit, is filled with that divine consciousness. Unless we see God in everything, one problem will lead to a solution, and that solution will lead to another problem. It's an infinite series. that had no beginning and will have no end. As long as we see a problem, we will strive for a solution. The only ultimate approach is not to see the problem. Then you don't require a solution. Really speaking, this is the thing we should strive for, not to see that problem, not to see any difficulty, to see only that divine reality. And you say, well, that's, I want to do so many things, I want to experience so many things, I want to go here, I want to go there, I want to do this, I want to do that. As long as that is the case, we will go and do this and that and go here and there, and that'll be all right. But then we should not complain that we can't get rid of our problems. We should not complain that we feel unfulfilled, that we are constantly go from one difficulty, the solution to one difficulty, and find ourselves confronted with other difficulties. That, in other words, this process really can be a very gradual process. Yes, I undertake spiritual discipline, karma yoga, bhakti yoga, raja yoga, jnana yoga, all the yogas I undertake. It slowly, little by little, I make some progress, I gain insight, and I achieve certain understanding and some satisfaction. But then before we're through, with too much of this, life comes to an end and the whole thing starts again, and we have to again manifest this. Because according to the ancient sages and traditions in not only in India but in some other places also, this is not the end. This life, this life is over. Oh, fortunately, this life now peace eternal. No, another life will manifest itself. That is the tradition. And that is what has been known in many, not only in the Indian tradition, many traditions have had this idea. And it makes sense, because if we don't realize that infinity, in other words, if we don't, as long as new problems always come up, we attain solutions and then our approach, we find ourselves confronted with additional problems. As long as that happens, there will be an impetus toward solutions. When the problem disappears, the need for the solution also disappears, and then that satisfaction that is described by the knowers of God, the knowers of reality, has a chance of manifesting itself. So, Sri Ramakrishna's emphasis, Shiva Jnane Jiva Seva. Jnana means Shiva Jnane, looking upon all as divine, looking upon everything as pervaded by divinity. Perform your service, do whatever needs to be done, serve with that knowledge, with the knowledge of divinity. So whether you're successful or unsuccessful, the point is, the basic success is in seeing God in the problem. The solution of the problem is definitely of a secondary nature. But feeling that every problem that confronts us is a vision of God, is an experience of divinity, that everything is filled with divinity, that is the way to come to the end of this cycle of problem-solution, creating another problem for another solution. Then this life is gone, another life comes, there's no end to it. So this atmano mokshartam jagatitaya cha, seeing for one's own welfare and for the welfare of the world, the basic motto of the order, has this at its heart, has this basic idea, Shiva Jnane Jiva Seva, seeing that divine reality at the heart of everything, worship. That's the proper attitude toward anything in this world is an attitude of worship. Because everything that is presented to us is God in that form, is the essence of it is God. And the proper attitude, the only proper attitude toward a manifestation of God is worship. And the worship, part of the worship includes this seva, this dedication, this dedicated activity as part of the worship of solving this particular problem. Now, this was put into effect in a very conspicuous way after Swami Vivekananda came back to Calcutta. There happened to be a plague in Calcutta. Plague is generally caused by rats who are infected, and they spread the infection, and the presence of these rats is due generally because the trash has not been taken care of, cleanliness has not been maintained. So the first first major activity of the Ramakrishna Mission was plague relief in Calcutta in 1897. And this meant a lot of cleaning and a lot of, there was a tremendous amount of physical labor involved. Swami Vivekananda, Sister Nivedita, they all were involved in that tremendous activity. And then it went on to, schools were founded, and there was, of course, there was preaching activity. So many, in times of famine, in times of flood, this was, these activities of the Ramakrishna Mission were, became a very central part. Not long ago, there was a tremendous rainfall in the Himalayas, and the Ramakrishna Mission again, whatever the occasion is, there was the tsunami that hit the coasts of South India a few years ago. All of these things, whatever happens, this is the impetus of this order is to go and to help. So it is on that level it is also done, but on the deeper level, where it involves each one of us, how are we to react to it? And there, that is where this comes in, that the idea is there is God alone. There is nothing else. And whatever we do is a worship of God. In other words, everything, there's an old saying that, you know, whatever we do when we sleep at night, this is a prostration of in front of the Lord, and we should feel that we are falling asleep, as it were, in His arms, you could say, surrounded by God, we're falling asleep. Whenever we eat anything, we're offering the food. Of course, we say Brahmar Panam Brahmavi, that Brahman is in this, in the food. Brahman is in the instrument. Brahman is the person who is offering the food. Brahman is, you know, we say all these things. This is Brahman. Yes, it's Brahman. But then we start eating, and without eating, we forget about the basic principle that has been, that is the foundation of the very act of eating. Every action should be viewed as pervaded by divinity. And in other words, it isn't that every problem should be looked at as an opportunity or as an opportunity to worship. So it is this type of activity, not only in the formal way when we are performing, we're going down to a soup kitchen and helping to serve people who are hungry. All of these things, whatever it is that happens to be done, that is all symbolic, because every action should be looked at that way. Now, this is, there are certain, some of our scriptures are very specific on this, to provide this, the rationale or the justification for this. In the Bhagavad Gita, that famous, there are two verses from chapter 13, 27 and 28. Samam sarveshu bhuteshu. So samam, the same, sarveshu bhuteshu, in every being, tishtantam, abiding in every being. What is abiding in every being? Parameshwaram, the Parama Ishvara, the Supreme Lord. So the Supreme Reality is abiding in every being. This is not some wishful thinking that, yes, it would be nice if it were so. This describes a state of realization that saints and sages have had. Seeing the Supreme Lord, he who sees the Supreme Lord in this way, in every being, vinashyatsva abhinashyantam, the indestructible in that which is destructible. He who sees, yah pasyati, sapasyati, he really sees. Seeing the imperishable among the perishable. I mean, these are things that we have to bring into our own lives. Every moment should be filled with, or should be, we should emphasize this, to feel that every moment is filled with the reality of God. How you view God, what your particular attitude is not the question. That is adaptable to all individuals in different ways. Each individual will choose a way of approaching God. But the point is, samam sarveshu bhuteshu, samam, in the same way, in every being, tishtantam, standing or abiding in every being. What is it that abides in every being? The Parama Ishvara, the Supreme Lord. That Supreme Reality, give it whatever name you like. Call it Brahman, call it by other names, whatever name you give it. There is that Supreme Reality which is present everywhere in everything. This is the basic impulse of science, is that same thing. You know, physics is trying to find that which is at the heart of everything. What is the essence of everything? And they've gone very, very far, no doubt. But they haven't found it. And they've gotten to a level of investigation where there's no possibility that they can actually find it. I mean, they may theoretically propose it, but experimentally, the fineness of what has been reached is so minute, so subtle, that no physical experiment could ever possibly demonstrate its existence. So they will have to go to what the famous physicist Erwin Schrödinger at one time said, perhaps consciousness is at the heart of everything. Perhaps consciousness is the essence of everything. Well, we don't have to say perhaps, because our saints and sages have maintained that consciousness, chit, is one of the names that is given to that ultimate reality. And the Chandogya Upanishad clearly maintains sadeva somya idam agra asit. Agre, in the beginning, there was asit, only consciousness, sat. Sat eva, consciousness alone was in the beginning. So somebody rejoined in the same, the next verse in the same Upanishad, someone suggested, no, maybe it's maybe it wasn't existence or consciousness that was at the beginning, maybe it was non-existence that was at the beginning, because from non-existence all this existence would have come. And so that is suggested in the next verse. But the argument is immediately put down as saying, what is it? How could it be that from nothing, something, consciousness, has arisen? In order for there to be, for someone to say, this is the commentary now, in order for someone to say that there is nothing, there has to be someone to witness the fact that there is nothing. And if there's someone who's witnessing the fact that there is nothing, there cannot be nothing. So this is it's a self-canceling argument. In the beginning, consciousness alone existed. In other words, consciousness being sat, chit. Sat is existence, chit is consciousness. And since there was nothing else, it was an undiluted or unagitated reality, ananda was there in the beginning. So sat, chit, ananda, existence, consciousness, bliss. So the point is that there, the beginning was not nothing. When you finally reduce everything to its ultimate simplicity, when you analyze everything to the utmost degree, and you finally come to what is at the very center, at the very core of everything, you've eliminated all the superficiality, what is it that you come to ultimately? You come to consciousness, sat, chit, ananda. You come to consciousness, also you come to joy. What is joy? Joy is not the, there is a certain amount of joy in the enjoyment of this or that limited object in a limited way. But there's no unmixed ananda except in that ultimate reality. So that being the truth, that being the, as the sages of the Upanishads and the Gita have confirmed, that being the reality, there is only that consciousness, there is only that divine reality. Divine because it did not originate anywhere, anytime, and it is the background of everything. It never originated, and something that has never originated, by the same argument, can never be destroyed. So the background of everything, the heart of everything, the ultimate reality, as the essence of everything, is that sat chit ananda, that infinite divine principle. So this is not just wishful thinking that we should see God in everything, Shiva Jnane, that we should see Shiva in everything, and therefore serve everything as a worship. We're worshiping, whatever we do is a worship. Every action is to be seen as a worship. When we go from one place to another, when we walk from one place to another, God alone is to be seen, is to be felt. We're surrounded by that. Otherwise, if we're not surrounded by God, what are we surrounded by? Are we surrounded by air? Yes, to a certain extent we're surrounded by air, of course. But what is fundamental, what is important, what is crucial, what is central is not what is surrounding us on the surface, but what is surrounding our consciousness, our inner reality, our inner essence, our inner view of things. What surrounds our whole being, our the very screen on which we see everything that changes, the unchanging screen on which we see everything that changes. That unchanging screen is present everywhere in everything under all circumstances. Those are the ideas, the thoughts, the concepts that will lead us to a deeper understanding that we're surrounded by God. There isn't any place, there's no micro inch of space anywhere that's not filled with divinity. It isn't when we perform the Atmano Mokshatam Jagatita, Jagatitayacha, even our own self-liberation and the welfare of the world, all of those are included if we see the presence, if we feel the presence of that basic infinite divine principle everywhere. To feel the existence of God everywhere, that is the homework. That is what we have to manifest. That is what we have to bring to our own consciousness, that we are not, whatever we're looking at is not just a superficial something, that a superficial problem that has to be solved. On the surface, there are problems that have to be solved. But what is at the heart of everything? Every problem is at basis another way of looking at God. Somehow to bring that divine reality into every part of life, pratibodha viditam, into every part of life, so somehow bring God there. So then when you sit for meditation, what is meditation? It's bringing the consciousness of God, bringing to yourself that consciousness of God. That is what you're trying to do in meditation. So you sit there, you close your eyes, you concentrate on some symbol, but that is all just a mechanical thing. One should feel the presence of that reality in that symbol, in that mental attitude. This is not only in this Hindu tradition, it's also in all other traditions. Feeling the presence of God is at the very heart of everything. So, Atmano Mokshacham Jagat Hitayacha, for one's own liberation and for the welfare of the world. Really speaking, there's only one, that's all one thing. Feeling the presence of that divine reality everywhere, that has immediately accomplishes both. It is also the highest reality. It is the for the welfare of all, because if you feel the presence of God in whatever problem that's in front of you, even the most practical thing, you're looking at the problem in the very truest possible way. At the heart of every problem is that divine reality. At the heart of every solution is that divine reality. At the heart of every happiness, at the heart of every sorrow, at the heart of everything is that divine reality. And seeing that divine reality then in our meditation also, we become more and more absorbed in that. And feeling that divine presence everywhere, that is the core, the center of spiritual practice. Thank you.